Welcome back to Generation Varied Podcast. This is the show where we talk about geopolitics, business, tech, sports, and everything in between. My name is Caleb Norris. I am your host, and I'm joined here by my two co-hosts, Ben Okenge and Jack Widener. And we've got our wonderful producer in the background, Sophie St. Furman. But gentlemen, how are we doing today?
I've just been so excited for this day.
Yeah.
And So I couldn't be better, honestly.
Yeah, I drove from Lexington to here, and I enjoy just being in Columbus. We had some great bagel earlier, and I just got some my iced latte, and now I'm here with you both in person, so couldn't be more excited.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's we're having a good time. If you guys notice, we have two microphones here, so we're passing it back and forth. But we wanted to do something a little bit different with these episodes, which is give you guys a window and an opportunity to get to know us just a little bit better. So that's what we're gonna do today. But gentlemen, what's been going on in your guys' worlds lately?
Honestly, this is the first time in a while where I feel like there's not been a lot different in my life. I feel like I'm just coasting, which I'm really cool with right now. I feel like we all need some seasons of like not being overwhelmed by new stuff all the time, and that's where I'm at right now.
When you've been on the grind for so long, hitting a season of like right now I'm grinding, hitting a season of just like routine coasting is such a beautiful thing. So I love that.
Yeah, it's really refreshing and well needed.
Yeah, I think last time when we talked, I should. I'm going to be moving to DC, so it's like happening within a month. So while I'm doing my work and everything that's like normal, the back of my head is like, I need to pack. I need to get rid of some things. And then I'm thinking about, oh, I need something new, like PO box.
I haven't done that.
I need to do all the utility, Wi-Fi. Like, there's just these little things. I mean, when you're moving, it comes with a lot of weight, but at the same time, like, I'm excited because I feel like I haven't left Kentucky since I graduated. And
yeah.
This feels like a great next step for both Becca, my wife, and I. And I'm just very excited to live in the city and being closer to some of the friends there. So shout out to all my DC friends. So really excited to be in DC. So again, let me know if you got any food recommendation, because I'm still waiting.
I'm still dead that's what you started with. Your first inclination was, where am I going to eat when I get here? Like, I love that so much.
Like I said, this guy's been deprived living in Lexington.
I will say this, the very best Indian food that I've ever had is masala. And let me tell you something, Esther herself has said that that's the best Indian food that she's had in America.
Right there in little old Lexington, Kentucky.
So Dr. Esther Jaha is a faculty at the college we went to. She's from Mumbai, and she lived there for 20 years and then came to started working at the ASBA University, and that's how we kind of knew each other. And
yeah.
But yeah, so there's high remarks around masalas, and even people who visit Lexington and try the Indian food there, they all have been told me like, yeah, this is better than the city I'm currently at, the Indian food there. So I totally believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the spots where I actually remember first like hanging out all together.
Yeah.
It's just like weird thinking back to how long ago that was now. And, you know, hanging out in Lexington, going to a small school altogether, and now like having gone and we're each living our own lives, but we still get to meet up and have conversations. Like, that's pretty special. I don't think a lot of people have that. So
yeah,
we're very fortunate.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it all goes like into like the story of how this podcast like came to be. I think masala was probably the first time that all three of us were like sitting at a table together. And I don't even remember what it was for. I think it was for the intercultural office, was it?
It must have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only time I've been to masalas is when it's intercultural related. Yeah, so Ben, for the listeners, Caleb, Ben, and I, we worked in the intercultural affairs, which is there's different clubs like Black Students Alliance, Asian Students Alliance, International Students Alliance. So there's all these different alliances on campus that basically helps educate the campus on the different cultural backgrounds at the same time supporting students who are from that background. And that's kind of how Caleb, Ben, and I kind of our path crossed with one another on campus. I know the campus is super small. It's like less than 1,500 people on campus. But still, like, it is really cool that that's when we ran into each other. And that's one of the things I'm excited about today, is just to get to help you understand who Caleb is, who Ben is, and who I am. And for this episode specifically, Ben and I want to get a chance to just kind of ask Caleb a question and just to get to know him a little bit. Because when I met him, you know, Caleb is he's a leader on campus. Mm-hmm. He's very involved from the communication department, from the
you caught yourself there. Yes, I don't share my major publicly.
That's too fun. And also know Kayla from the student admissions, so just giving campus tours, being the handshake of the university, meeting the high school students as well, again, the intercultural office. So Caleb is a leader. He's also known for making great meal preps. He's known for having great taste in music. He sings really well. He has a great fashion.
Jack was the first person on payroll here when we started Generation Berry. That's why he's laying it on thick right now.
Now, Caleb is many things, many great things. And what I hope today is to kind of peel back some of the layers, like the onion layers, just to get to know, help you to understand who Caleb is, what are things that screams Caleb, and what are the things that happened in his life that shape who he is today. That way you kind of, you know, fall in love with Caleb even more, you know, because we're always becoming. And I want to kind of dig into Caleb today. It's like, what are some like those decisions that really had a huge impact in your life? Yeah, we're definitely going to ask you a lot of questions.
Before we get into all that, question I want to start off with, Caleb, is if you had to use three words, actually, even better, if those who know you best in this life had to use three words to describe you, what do you think those words would be?
Oof. What I would hope that they would be is this. I would hope that the first thing that somebody would say about me is that I'm loyal. Because for me, the only thing that really technically matters in the world is like people and like our experiences. And so I would hope people would say that I'm a loyal friend, that I'm a loyal family member, all of that kind of stuff. That's the first thing that I think is really important to me. And that I showed up for them like in the way that I needed to, like if something was, you know, going on in somebody's life. Second word, I hope people would say graceful, but like I'm like extending grace to other people, like, or like understanding, I guess. Because I do try to be very empathetic, I guess would be that word. I try to be very empathetic. And then I would hope people would say like authentic and like real, because I tried to, I mean, and this will get into my story a little bit more, but it's like there was a time in my life where you're presenting so many different versions of yourself to so many different people. Right. And it just gets exhausting after a while. And so as I've, you know, gotten older and like in my mid-20s, I've started to try to piece together like who actually is Caleb Norris and how do I stay consistent and live my most authentic self. So I do live pretty out loud about everything, but what you see is what you get. And so I hope people would say that about me.
Yeah, I would say all three of those are very accurate. And even from someone who I would say, like, we've only really been friends for a little while now. Mm-hmm. And I would say that just in the time that I've known you, even from before the time that I would really call you a friend, authentic is 100% one of the words that would first come to mind. Because I think the Caleb that I first met when we were in college is very different, but presents himself very differently from the Caleb that we see today.
Yeah.
Which is something that I actually appreciate about you so much, because I don't know what type of personal growth it takes to grow into that level of authenticity.
Yeah.
But it's definitely evident to all those around you. So, like,
wow, thank you.
Take us through a little bit, like, for someone who knows you and has seen you just over the past, let's say, like, 5 years, and has really gotten to see you, like, live into your own authenticity. What would you say is, like, going on in, like, the background that is unseen that kind of, you know, sparked that?
I don't remember who said this. She was, it was Barbara, I don't remember her last name, but she was one of the black professors and instructors at the at both NYU and at the black theater, first black theater in New York back in the 70s. And she talks about how the process to loving yourself and authenticity is very tedious, it's very painful, and it's very slow. And I have found that to be definitely the case. I think some of the things that have gone on in the background, at least over the last 5 years. I mean, I would have been I'd have been going into my senior year at Asbury at the time, and at that time in my life, I had just very recently come out and was trying to piece together, okay, how do I want to live? How do I find love for myself? Because even after coming out, I still didn't have a genuine love for myself. I still very much, if I could give you this pill and it would make you straight today, would you take it? You wouldn't have got the rest of the sentence out of your mouth. I'd have snatched it up in a minute. And so I think some of the things that have gone on is, number one, you have to look at yourself, have to do a lot of self-reflection. I moved to Savannah, Georgia right after college. My senior year was almost entirely, or my last full year was entirely online. Some classes were in person. All of the people that I was really close to that last year, we didn't get to spend a lot of time together because we were all so busy. I mean, so busy. And so it really started when I got my first apartment in Wilmore. And I started coming to grips with the fact that I'm not under somebody else's house anymore. I can live my life how I want to live my life. Who is it that Caleb Norris wants to be? And when I moved to Savannah, Georgia, right after college to for this company that I was working with, I moved down there and I was very much alone by myself with essentially no one for the first year and a half. And it was not fun. I mean, it was terrible. I'm a very social person. That isolation was terrible, you know?
I think there was a theme that I noticed, Caleb, especially from senior year until now, that I see in your life. And I was watching The Matrix, the movie, mm-hmm. the other day, and I didn't watch that movie until recently. For the second time. And one of the things, the red pill, blue pill scene,
mm-hmm.
and he asks, do you believe in fate? And the main actor said, no, because I don't like the idea that I don't have control of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there is this huge sense of you that no one's come to save you.
Absolutely.
And that if I want to create this life that I visualize in my mind, I need to step it up. And I think through all those actions, moving to Savannah, you talk about how you don't have that much community there. And now you are in Brooklyn and you are a trailblazer in your industry, in tech. And even this podcast, you know, like, you like I if no one's going to do it, I'm going to do it because no one's come to save me. And I think that's a theme that I see in your life recently. And that's really cool to watch because I'm a strong believer in law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And you attract those things around you. And it just feels like you have some key moments recently that really just, I don't know, you're just taking control of your life. The place, the areas that you can control, you know, because we can't control everything,
right?
But you can control the decisions you make.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool, Caleb, to see all of this.
Yeah, no, that is one of my, I could tell you where I was standing and what I was wearing when it clicked for me. I would say that for myself, there were some very specific moments where I was like, hey, nobody's coming to save you. Like, if you're going to be happy, and I don't want to say that like happiness is like the number one like goal in life, but like I think we should be trying to like be happy and like mm-hmm. spread positivity and spread love and make a better world for the future and all of that kind of stuff. There are so many moments that's like nobody's coming to save you and you're gonna have to figure this out if you're gonna be happy, you know?
I'm gonna touch on that a little bit. I feel like there's not a lot of, I'm just speaking from my experience, this is not everyone's experience. I believe that the life will beat you to your knees at some point. I don't know when, but it's going to happen. And a lot of that is like how you respond. But for you, Caleb, like it feels like that happened like during college, it happened earlier or right after college. But can you like take us through like what that moment was like what led to there? Because, you know, you made a decision.
Yeah.
To like, you know what, like I'm gonna do this.
Yeah, it honestly goes farther back. I'm gonna walk you through, I feel like just a really brief like history of myself.
We want this.
And that is that I feel like I started becoming like a self-actualized adult when I was actually like 16 or 17, just because of the circumstances that I was in. Like once you're coming to grips with like your sexuality, and I grew up, for those who don't know, I grew up in the evangelical church, in a Pentecostal church. And if this is like the spectrum of like Christianity, like this side over here is super strict and this side over here is like anything goes, we were like right over here. So it was a super, super restrictive theology and like system. And so when you do come to when you're growing up and you're on the other side of like puberty's happening and you're understanding like more about yourself and who you're attracted to and that kind of stuff, you literally have to get very serious in terms of like literal survival because of the thought processes and the beliefs that were given to me were so violent towards like queer people, towards gay people, that it literally, I felt like when I was 16, I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to really figure this out if I'm literally just gonna like stay alive, because like the mental anguish that you go through, and that's the only word that I would describe it as, is mental anguish that you go through, matures you real fast. Because you literally start like having a life and death conversation when you're presented with a theology that is as damaging as like evangelicals' take on queer people. So, yeah.
When do you, I mean, growing up in an evangelical community, system as you say it, when did you start noticing like I feel different or like I'm different?
Yeah, I would probably say like 6 or 7, and I don't think I've ever even told anybody this, but I had like this core memory unlocked the other day, and it was my dad couldn't take me to a football game, and so one of the ushers was like willing to like help me out and take me to this makeup. It was a makeup football game on Sunday because it got canceled on Saturday because we had gotten rained out or something. And he was helping me get into my football pants. I was like 6 or 7, and I remember thinking like, oh, there's a man here. Like, and I just like became aware that like, oh, this is like, I basically experienced like my first, without knowing what it was, like attraction to like another human being. And like, so it was very young. And that's why like when people talk about like, well, they're grooming kids and that kind of stuff, it's like, it doesn't, like kids even at 6 years old, like, and had having never seen anything, zero queer media, never saw a gay kiss, never saw a gay couple, nothing like that. And that's why, like, for me, like, sexuality is so innate in us. It's so natural. When people say it's unnatural, it's like, what are you talking about? Look around the planet. And one of the biggest things that is affirming, like, that I feel affirmed by God, like, through all of this is, like, we actually, if you really get down to brass tacks and nails, we actually know very little about God. Like, like, without a shadow of a doubt, we actually know very little. Most everything is an interpretation of something that has been translated three or four times. So look around at the natural world and the natural universe. There's a lot of things and characteristics that you can give to God. If there is one characteristic that God absolutely has, it's that they are a creative force that is obsessed with creation and is obsessed with variety. We live in a universe with billions of galaxies. If we come all the way down from those billions, we come right to our little insignificant galaxy, technically. Billions of stars within our own galaxy. If we go all the way down to planet Earth, trillions of different species of fish, billions of different species of insects, millions of different species of animals. If the world was reset, there would probably be about 100,000 different languages. There are probably times that by two different ethnicities and specific subcultures and groups. Tons of different human components and makeups and colors and eye colors and different things like that. And you mean to tell me that that God that created all of the universe and all of those galaxies and all of those different types of people and all of those different languages, that God who is obsessed with variety and is obsessed with creating, he created two genders and one holy sexuality. It's out of alignment with creation that we're currently living in. It's out of alignment. It would not make sense. So for me, there are things like that now that, like, I have to affirm me. But at the time, I was working through all of that and trying to piece together, okay, how do I literally stay alive and, you know, continue in my faith? And faith is really something that is important to me. We haven't really talked about it a lot on the podcast yet, just because I'm very much of the opinion of be about it, don't talk about it. Like, I hope that people would say there's something different about Caleb simply from their interactions, not because I'm walking around passing out tracts and inviting people to church. I want people to know that I'm a safe person, somebody that will sit with them in the junk, somebody that's going to celebrate them when they're doing well, somebody that's going to cry with them when they're crying. And I think that is, like, the cause of Christ is the with us God versus the fix us God versus this idea that we have to have all of the answers and we have to have absolutes. Like, it's just for the birds, I think.
Yeah, totally. I think that idea that we have to have an absolute answer to every scenario, every situation is very foolish. Like, yeah. To think that, like, every situation and every scenario, every human experience, question, thought, has a knowable answer. I think that is a thought for people with no humility. So you talk about, like, this experience of, like, coming to know yourself and your sexuality and how, like, your struggle with faith through all of that, right? Mm-hmm. Would you say that, like, outside of faith, outside of Christianity, socially, if religion were not a thing on this planet, how do you think you still would have had some sort of a struggle? Or would you say it's, like, purely that faith aspect, that Christianity aspect? What percentage of your struggle of growing up and then eventually, like, coming out and that kind of thing is Christianity based, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, no, good question. I think for myself, I think when faith is done well, it centers humanity like at its center. And a lot of people think like, well, no, like our entire majority of our faith should be entirely just in worship and awe of this creator and of this God. And I always go back to this thought that like, and I literally say to people, I want you to follow that thought. So there's a God who went through all of the trouble of creating this universe because their only desire was to get nothing but constant praise and worship. If you created a mini-verse or something like that, and you created sentient beings, and you said your only purpose in life is to tell me how amazing I am, we would consider you insane, and we would call you an insane psychopathic narcissist. And this is the lens at which people view God from. And so I would say that majority of my trauma, one of the reasons why I feel like I try to be at least a resilient person is because it's like, I mean, I was in the trenches fighting with these. And I think, especially evangelicalism, a lot of these concepts are way too adult for children. And they were introduced to me as a child, as a very young child. And so it matures you really, really fast. But also, I think majority of the struggles that I've had in life have been because of religion. But I will say that on the opposite side, I don't think I don't disparage like my parents for like having us grow up that way or anything, because I learned a lot about, because I was put through like these like tests or trials, and like I came out on the other side. It's like nobody can convince me like of the opposite. Like nobody will ever be able to convince me that God does not honor, love, and accept queer people. Like you'll never be able to convince me of that now. And so that is one of the things that when you struggle with something, it's like, and this goes back to your question, Caleb, how are you so sure of yourself? And you come to opinions and conclusions like really, really quickly. And then you like stand on what it is that you say. It's literally because I had to do that for my own self, for my own life, for so much of things, because there was nobody who agreed with my positions growing up. There was nobody that was asking the questions that I was asking. There was nobody that was willing to put themselves out there. The reason why, and I can share more about this here in a bit, but like the reason why I left was because I literally was just asking questions and was just being chastised for it. People were like, why are you? And I was like, no, we're having to do mental gymnastics to make this stuff make sense. And I believe, and if I still believe in God, I have a good relationship, I think, with faith in general. And I still want to be honoring to whomst ever is up there. But in a much more, I want to love God by how I show love for other people on this earth. And a lot of evangelicalism, a lot of Pentecostalism is honestly a lot of show. It's a lot of control. It's a lot of inconsistencies. So I think that's one of the only benefits of going through so much so young, is that it's like now it's like nobody's pulling the wool over my eyes anymore. It's like, well, once you rip that off, it's like nobody can convince you otherwise anymore.
Right. I think like with everything that you've said and with just conversations that we've had in the past and stuff, I think you are one of the people who has really helped me process this idea of like, yes, it is important to stand on what you believe, but also it's important to have enough humility to know that like what we believe
absolutely
might not be the 100% truth, right?
Absolutely.
And so to be able to have the humility of that as like a baseline is super important. I think one thing that corporately like Christians have done is come up with this notion of like, we know the best way
exactly
to bring you know, glory to God, right? Yeah. And one of my favorite reminders that I think about frequently is like when Jesus talks about, like, basically we don't know on this side of eternity, you know, who is gonna be in heaven. We're not the ones who get to make that call. He said to, like, to the Pharisees, and this still applies to people to this day, of like basically he was like, there are gonna be some of you who think that you are in and who think that you are accepted, and you're gonna say, oh, but didn't I cast out demons in your name?
Yeah.
Didn't I do all yeah. these wonderful things? And they're going to get to eternity, and God is going to say, I never knew you.
Yeah.
And so we need to all take a step back and realize, like, I can't just live off of my own interpretations yeah. of things. I have to, yes, think critically, yes, stand firm, but also have the humility to know that we don't know everything.
And that's the biggest thing for me, and it's the reason why, and I live by this rule. I will not talk theology with somebody that will not sit down with me and say, this is what I believe, but I could be wrong about all of it. If you can't say that phrase afterwards, we cannot talk theology, because it's so arrogant. It's such an intellectually dishonest place to come and say, I know this for a fact, and this is how you should and need to be living your life. It's such an arrogant place to, like, stand, because it's like, let me get this straight. You are infinitely simple and basic-minded. All of us are, in comparison to an omnipresent, omniscient, all-knowing God, right? And the example that I use is, we are as goldfish to humanity as, like, God is to us. We are so simple-minded. And so the one of the things that sort of got me, like, deconstructing, like, even aside from my sexuality, is just the doctrine of hell. And what a lot of people in the evangelical born-again movement will say is that they believe in, like, the doctrine of, like, salvation. The number one belief in evangelicalism is in the doctrine of hell. And I had a friend that said this to me one time, and this sort of kicked me off. They said, if you remove the doctrine of hell like a little ribbon, everything else that you believe in will fall out. And I was like, what are you talking about? They were like, "In say that hell doesn't exist. Are there any core beliefs that you've been taught growing up that stand if hell isn't real?" And I got to thinking about it, and I was like, oh my God, if I remove hell, nothing else, like, doctrine-wise, really, because there wasn't a strong doctrine of grace and justice and giving back and living with good godly integrity, not because you wanted to escape hell, but because it was the right thing to do to your fellow man. There was no conversations like that. So that thinking does is it actually breeds. It breeds narcissism and it breeds psychosis, because you have this nagging fear that if I mess up or if I don't believe the right thing, I'm going to burn in hell for an eternity. Okay, so that sends you into psychosis. And then what people tell you on the opposite side is that essentially you have to be hyper-focused on your own self and on your own actions in order to get to heaven, versus taking the blinders off from your own world and taking a look around.
Yep.
That's why I just think that anything that is not majority of evangelicalism, it's all based off of this idea of hell. And when you remove that, it all crumbles. And that's one of the things that, like, I had to do, like, my view on, like, Jack, what's your view on heaven and hell now?
I mean, I think when you brought that up, it helps me, like, oh yeah, because I also grew up, I honestly don't know what, I guess, like, non-denomination,
mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean, I live majority of my life in Taiwan, so, like, yeah. I think there's another layer of American evangelicalism,
mm-hmm.
Especially white conservative evangelicalism, Yeah. There's layers within layers. And I think when I went to a college in the middle of Kentucky, that has opened my eyes to like, oh, like this feels, I mean, you meet people from different background, Baptist, Catholic, so on and so on and so on. So I feel, like you said, like it's all up to interpretations. But one thing that's very important in the midst of all of this is when you're going back to, in terms of like having this time of conversation, Caleb, I think one thing that I had to come to terms, like, you know, like it's not about what you believe and not believe, it's also like in the process of figuring out what posture are you holding, because you know you are you're constantly becoming. And how do you disagree? How do you agree? Like, is it pointing you to, for example, love and grace? Or is it pointing you to, like, fear? Like, these characteristics that I believe is, you know, not right. You know, so I think that's just another layer. It's like, in the process of these, making things make sense, like, what posture are you holding? But no, that's so, I never heard of that concept, like you said, in terms of like doctrines of hell, like if you remove that, how does that explain the rest of the world?
Yeah.
And that's the part of, you know, life is trying to figure out, like, I don't know all the answers.
Yeah.
Like, I know you don't and Ben does. But it's these types of, like, getting to know you, like, allows us to understand, oh, like, I mean, these are heavy questions to ask yourself. Yeah, you know, when you're in high school,
these are, I started contemplating hell seriously when I was in, like, when I was like six, dude.
That's nothing, like, this is not normal. Like, I hope, well, maybe it is normal. We just don't talk about it because people are more concerned about if they like me or they don't like me. This is my crush.
Yeah.
Like, I'm playing against my rival team. Like, they're wondering about sports, family, friends.
I was studying eschatology, buddy. I was
like, think about it. Like, I feel like that's another layer about you. It's like you are confronted with all these heavy questions, and honestly, people never ask themselves or even think to explore, because that they feel guilty about thinking those questions. So, and honestly, like, I never faced these kind of questions until I meet peers of mine that are hurt by church, hurt by education. And that's when you realize, okay, like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And it's okay to ask that. You know, I think we have to wrestle with all of these things.
Wrestling. Yes.
Yeah. We're just trying to, I don't know. I think in the process of wrestling, how you handle yourself is, to me, one of the most important part, because that shapes what kind of world you want to become. What do you want the world to be? So I think that's a lot of times for me, like, I'm not as, let's say, outspoken or vocal about what I think, because I'm just listening, because I don't know.
Yeah.
But if I listen and ask questions, that will help inform me a little bit more about just who the other person is. So, yeah. Like, kind of what we're doing here.
Yeah, I think, like, one of the things you mentioned, just of not being forced to think about really big or deep things in your earlier age, because, you know, you didn't have some of those forces up against you, right? Yeah. Like, I would say I always, since being a little kid, liked to think of some of these things similarly to you. The only difference is the motivating factor behind it. For me, it's just like I genuinely like to think and just try to grow in wisdom and knowledge, and that kind of thing is enjoyable to me. But it's a whole different experience when it's like, I'm thinking about these things because they are a defining part of my identity that I have to wrestle with to be able to live this life in peace within myself.
Yeah.
And so to hear you say that of like, I was thinking these things at, you know, a very young age because I had to, because these were some of the wrestling thoughts that I was forced into. It shows me like the insane amount of like privilege in my position and like my ability and like, like Jack, you're saying like some of these things you'd never thought about until you were like much older. Like, these are privileged positions we're in. And I think that's a big part of what's shaped like this Western, like American conservative evangelical Christianity that we see all around us.
Yeah.
Is just like not having any type of forces socially up against you, to that where it's like, you know, I know the answer to this, but the only reason why I know the answer to this is because I've never been in a situation that's really like challenged me against that.
Right.
And so like, A, I feel for you that you had to have those kinds of pressures up against you to force you into that. But also, in a way, it is amazing to see how like, being forced into deep thinking has really like pushed you into the person that you are now.
Yeah.
So that's also like something to be celebrated too.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think for me, like my values in life now are, number one, I always try to do no harm wherever I'm at. I try to do no harm to people, places, like wherever I'm at. Like, that's my number one thing. I don't want to disturb anybody. I want to leave people, places that I'm at better than when I found them. I also really, really value mutuality and good leadership and things like that. Like, I hate power dynamics of like, well, I'm the boss, or like I'm the leader, or I'm the pastor, or I'm this person, so what I say goes. Because that was a huge part of our upbringing, was that the pastor was like your this leading voice in your life. And I sat under some crappy pastors, man, that were just not, they were just fundamentally not very good people, not very kind people. It does make you appreciate, you know, being able to come out on the other side and be okay, because I know very few people that grew up how I grew up and sort of defected from the faith that are actually doing well in their lives. Like, I know very few people. It can be a pretty detrimental thing and really set people back. So I am very thankful that I've been able to come out on the other side.
Yeah, thanks for sharing all of that. I love this type of conversation and just getting to know you, Caleb. But one of my favorite questions when I guess the question I like people asking me to help others understand me more is like, who's on your Mount Rushmore in terms of like who influenced you? This could be somebody that's alive, somebody that's not alive. This could be somebody you know or not know, like a celebrity or whatnot. So Caleb, like, who is on your Mount Rushmore when it comes to these figures that really impacted who you are today?
Oof. That's a really good question. I might tear up here. First person I would say would probably be, I'm going to exclude family from this. Shout out to my mom. I obviously love my mom. I'm going to exclude family from this.
Is on Mount Rushmore for everybody.
Like that's an automatic.
That's liberty.
Yeah, bro. That's, I mean, come on now.
Moms are the best.
And my dad too. Like, my dad's a legend too. But I would probably say outside of just like family, first person I think would be my first boss. Her name is Tanya Bosher. I literally just called her yesterday to run something by her. And Tanya invested in me like nobody else ever has. She really took my fresh 18-year-old mind that was full of energy and wanted to learn about business and sales and really invested in me. And even outside of that, like there was a time when I was like, when I was struggling with my sexuality, and there was this guy at the restaurant that was kind of like, he was my age. He was like looking me up and down. And my boss was like, why don't you go over and say hi to him? And I was like, oh, I could. And she was like, you're not ready. And that's okay. But one day you might be. And it was one of the first adults to ever say it's okay to be gay. I think she might be like the first adult to ever like say, Caleb, you know that it's okay. Like, and so that was huge for me. I still love her to pieces. One day I'm going to buy her a Birkin when I'm a millionaire, hopefully. second person I would probably say would be professor at OCU, Ben Williamson.
What's OCU?
Oh, gosh. OCU is Ohio Christian University. The university that shall not be named. No, I'm kidding. It's a great school. They've got great people.
He was like, Jack, why did you force me to talk about this? I went there for a reason, man.
I actually made a...
Context is everything. It sounds like OCU has a huge impact. Let us know.
It low-key did. OCU was a place. It wasn't a fun place for no other reason other than it's literally just like in the middle of nowhere and the campus is like three buildings. So it wasn't like a ton of fun, but I actually met some pretty genuine people there that really impacted me. One professor, he probably does not remember me. His name is Dr. Ben Williamson. He taught Christian worldviews or something like that. And he literally, I think, started the semester saying, like, whatever denomination you're from, my goal is to poke holes in your theology and so that you will come back to a more humble position about what you believe and so that you can continue on in your, like, biblical studies world, you know. But he was going through something the semester that I was a student. And he didn't share details, but he was pretty vocal about like, I don't know how to pray right now because I'm going through so much. And so I'm just doing what I can to get by. And it was the most honest that I had ever heard somebody from that position present their faith when they were really struggling. And it really resonated with me because at this point I'd like just turned 21, my low key guy that I had been seeing for like 4 years off and on. His parents were like Baptist pastors too. So we would be together for 3 months. One of us would get convicted and we'd be like, we can't do this anymore. Like God wants us to, you know, and then 3 months later we'd come back and then the other person would do it. We did that back and forth for like 4 years. Well, we actually ended things like on my 21st birthday. I rebounded with this. I got on an app for the first time, rebounded with this new guy. Felt like genuine human connection for the first time. And I was like, oh, I'm gay. Because the whole time you're telling yourself, you're trying to create a scenario where you're like, maybe I'm bisexual. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm not all the way. And this could just be a phase. This could just be a phase. And you are reasoning with yourself. And when I met this other guy, it was like, no. No, you've never experienced that with anybody else. Like you're like, there's no way. And at the same time, a bunch of church stuff at church was happening. My mentor, who was like huge in the denomination, had just went off the rez, said some horrible things to me. It like broke me and shattered me at the time, because to me, this was like second to God, essentially, this person that, and it was all because I was just asking questions. And so at the time, all of these things had just happened and lined up perfectly. And so Ben Williamson would be number two. John Roller would probably be number three, professor at Asbury when I transferred. A lot of the concepts that I'm talking about today, I have to credit him for him. He's the one that asked, like, if you created a universe and you only created sentient beings so that they would have to worship you and or suffer an eternal damning death and anguish forever, would we say that you're a good person? I said, absolutely not. So then why do we give those characteristics to God? John is the one who really helped me deconstruct, and I'm so thankful for him. And then the last person on my Mount Rushmore would probably be my main mentor now. She's like the chair of my life board, if you will, my Savannah mom, Dr. Nicole Hyatt. And the semi, I feel like, glow up that I've had over the last couple of years of taking care of myself more, this podcast, pursuing the things that I want to pursue, moving to New York, all of that kind of stuff, really came from a time where she looked me in the eyes in the kitchen and I said to her, because I was about to move back to Columbus and with a friend, and it would not have been good. And she said, if nobody's ever told you this before, because I said to her, I said, I've always wanted to believe that I'm special. I've always wanted to believe that I'm different, that I'm going to make an impact in the world, that I'm here for a purpose. Like, I've always wanted to give into that belief, but I just don't know how. And she looked at me in the eyes and she said this in her kitchen. She said, if nobody's told you this before, you're one of the special ones. She was like, let me be the first person to tell you that. And so that moment, I go back to that moment. That moment changed my life because it gave me the, like, start living that way. Like, start living your most authentic out. Do the crazy, those dreams that terrify you and scare you. Go and do them. And it really encouraged me. So those would be my four. It would be Tanya, Ben, John, and Nicole.
Wow. Shout out to all four of those amazing individuals. Yeah. No, thanks for sharing that. No, I love that question because, you know, it's open for interpretation in terms of what kind of impact they have on you. It feels like all those four people were at a pivotal point of your life. And it makes a lot of sense of who you are today. So, no, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I love this kind of conversation, Caleb. You know, it's just, again, peel back the layers, the onion layers, and what is your motive? What is your worldview? And, you know, what do you want to be remembered by? And I think, you know, while we're in our mid-20s, that doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
You know, but so, yeah, it's really cool to just see, you know, I guess how we have gone close, you know, just working on this podcast. And listeners, I hope you got to know a little bit more about Caleb and who he is and the things and principles he lives by, and that's who Caleb is. He's a man of principles, and we need more people like that. And, you know, Caleb is helping Ben and I become a better person every episode because, one, I don't listen to Beyonce as much, but now I do.
You are a better person for listening to Beyonce. I truly believe that.
But yeah, and, you know, Kid, I think just, you know, moving forward, just keep looking back at those confidence anchors moments you had, like these four things, these four people that have an impact on you. Like, and I hope I'll do the same thing too. But thanks for just being vulnerable and transparent about just some of your upbringing and the challenges you had to face. Ben, any last question for Caleb or final thoughts?
No, not really. I'm going to have to process a lot of things. I hope that, like, if you guys have gotten anything from this conversation, is just that, like, there are people in your life who are willing to share so much wisdom, so much perspective, that will allow you to understand not only them, but even yourselves better. And I think that that's one of the things that Caleb did a great job of today. So thanks for that.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you guys for asking good questions and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah. Well, as always, this has been Generation Varied, and we are so thankful that you would join us and be part of this conversation with us. We really appreciate this community that we get to build with you all. We hope that this episode brightened your day, that you learned something, that your thinking was challenged, and just that you would use some of this talking to help grow. Please share this episode with a friend. Go follow us on social media at Generation Varied. And if you have any topics that you'd like to discuss in the future or any more questions for us, please DM us or email us at generationvaried@gmail.com. Rate us 5 stars.
Yes.
And
yeah, we need five stars.
We'll see you in the next one. Thanks for joining us, guys.